You want to lead?
Sashi
Puki Chukshing Retok Chom Rira Bling Shin Yen Degen Padi Sange Shing Du Mikte Uwagi Jokun Amda Shing La Chupasho Idam Guru Radha Mandala Kam Niryatayami
Sange
Chudang Soki Choknam La Jamchu Bardu Dakni Kapsuchi Daki Chenyengi Pe Sunam Ki Jola Penchir Sange Jupasho
Sange
Chudang Soki Choknam La Jamchu Bardu Dakni Kapsuchi Daki Chenyengi Pe Sunam Ki Jola Penchir Sange Chupasho
Sange
Chudang Soki Choknam La Jamchu Bardu Dakni Kyapsuchi Daki Shenyengi Pe Sunam Ki Jola Penchir Sange Chupasho We'll start with a meditation. So if you're on the chair, both feet flat on the floor, back straight. Shoulders relax down. And your chin is level with the floor. Not tilted down, not tilted up. And starting with your awareness at the crown of your head, scan down your body. Let go of any holding, worry, or tension as you go. Give all of your attention to each place that your awareness touches. Lingering as long as you need to, maybe more at the forehead or the eyes. Once you've scanned all the way down the body, start to scan back up. Pausing wherever you need to on the upward scan as well. more the awareness rests in the physical form, the more any clouds of unhappiness or anxiety, anything that's plaguing you, just melt away. Bring your awareness to your breath and how it moves your body. Focusing on the lungs as they move. Seeing if you can find that space where any other sounds are of no interest at all. That place where you've decided, I'm here and this is what I'm doing. We're used to being drawn and going to every sound. Simply a new habit to not do that. And gently let go of the focus on the chest, on the lungs moving. Checking back in with the whole physical form, letting go of tension that's been built up just from the focusing. And expanding, broadening your awareness, coming back to the room and the feel. The sounds. And making a dedication, the highest dedication that you can come to right now. Open your eyes and move when you're ready. And good to get into the habit of each time you're done with a meditation, thinking, awesome, good job, amazing thing to do, this is what I like doing.
Can you put that
on too? Okay, what? Oh.
The drawer still.
Right, so we're on class 6 of the Karma course. And this is course 5 out of 18 that we're doing. Today is Wednesday, May 3rd. And the course is Karma Creating Your Future. Sure, if we've talked about this a little bit before, but the idea that karma without emptiness just doesn't work and doesn't really make sense either. That's mostly what we're going to talk about tonight, and we'll discuss this mostly from Master Chandrakirti. He wrote the main text of the Middle Way that we study the most. The highest part of the Middle Way, which is what our school's called. What are we called? Does anybody know? Yep. Madhyamika. And then there's a second word.
Prasangika.
Yep. Madhyamika Prasangika. Oh. I didn't mean to do that.
Uh-oh. How did you even do that?
I pressed the square button. I didn't even want to go to the next one yet anyways. Okay. So the text is called Entering the Middle Way. And Master Chandrakirti lived about 600 AD. We're going to study his point of view along with Jhampa. I doubt anybody knows who that is, but I will ask anyways. I didn't know that this was his name. Lord Maitreya. And he collaborated with Master Asanga, who's Master Asanga's brother or half-brother. It starts with a V. Mm-hmm. Master Vasubandhu. Mm-hmm. And Master Asanga wrote 5 great books with Jhampa. So, who's Lord Maitreya? Who knows? Mm-hmm. He's the coming Buddha. So, according to different people, he's either already a Buddha or he's not already a Buddha. If he's already a Buddha, how is it that Master Asanga wrote 5 great books with him? Yep. I believe the story is that he went up to Buddha Paradise and all the books and the wisdom were taught to him, and then he wrote the stories, or not the stories, but he wrote the books. Okay. So let's go to that. So, how is karma caused through lack of understanding emptiness? That's what we're going to talk about tonight. The source is Gyu Lama. Say Gyu Lama.
Gyu Lama.
Gyu Lama.
Gyu Lama.
The Sanskrit for that is Uttara Tantra. And it's Tantra, but it's not Tantra as in the secret teachings. It's Tantra as in a higher lineage. So when you see Tantra, it doesn't always mean secret teaching. That's why things can be very confusing. So this was dictated by two master sangha by Jampa. Say Jampa.
Jampa.
A.K.A. Lord Maitreya.
Lord
Maitreya. And he wrote a lot about the relationship of karma and emptiness. He describes how karma is created by a lack of understanding, which we're going to talk a lot about tonight. I like this picture because I feel like you get a sense of emptiness. Or you know what I think emptiness is at this point in my career. Can you tell it's like it's water going out there and then it's like the fog
I don't
up above? Oh, you thought it was just like a gray background?
Yeah, I didn't notice the boat. You can't really tell where like the water ends and the sky begins. You can a little bit more on the computer.
Yep. So that's kind of why I chose it. It's a little gloomy. Okay. So this book describes six causal steps to creating karma. So this is a good thing to know because we need to know how to break the cycle. And we don't know really how to break it unless we know how we're doing it. So the first one is the first step in the six causal steps. Starts with a bakchak, which is a mental seed, or karmic bakchak. And it's from a previous life, where through ignorance we saw a thing that appeared to be self-existent. What is it that you think would be self-existent here?
The kid kicking the chair.
And what about the kid kicking the chair?
That's annoying.
Yeah. That she's really annoying. But maybe if there were kids in here, they wouldn't see it that way. Maybe they'd see that, oh, look, that girl's having such a good time, and why is that guy being so grumpy? Or the parent would see it a different way, which is the opposite of self-existent. So we think it's self-existent as in she's annoying and that's it. But it can't be that way if different people see it different ways and experience it validly different ways. She can't be out there as an annoying little girl or everyone would have to see her that way. So the driver who we think is irritating on the road, everyone would have to see that driver as totally irritating. If that's how they really were, if they were out there coming at us as irritating driver, everyone would have to experience them that way. And they couldn't ever be anything else either. They would be irritating driver all the time. You would see them walking down the street, not even in a car, and they'd be irritating driver if they were really that unchanging thing. Okay. So where does this bakchak come from? It's mainly from past lives. And we've possibly had the bakchak or the karmic seed for time with no beginning. And that can be, when we start to first practice karma, we can feel like we're blaming ourselves all the time. If it came from some time, who knows when, like millions of lifetimes ago, that can lessen the blame. Because although it's in our mind stream, and at some point, you know, maybe a former us did it. It's not like I did this thing in my life, I caused this myself, which is very different because we think we're really here as like, I think Heather's really here. And so it feels heavy to me to say I did this, as opposed to this was a seed that was planted lifetimes ago and it's ripening now. Not that I'm not responsible for it. A different I, you know, is responsible for it. Okay. And is the bakchak physical or mental? In Buddhism, there's basically physical, mental, and those which are neither physical nor mental. So the bhakchak resides within you and ripens at a certain time. And we talked a lot about this last week. We talked about the kunchi, which is... Does anyone remember what the kunchi is? Mm-hmm. Yep, the storehouse consciousness. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And then what did we say that Madhyamika Prasangika, or the highest school, says about where the bhakchaks are stored? It's a little simpler idea.
In the mind stream?
Yeah, in the mind stream. And the reason we're studying all of them, or both of them, is so that we get a better understanding of karma overall, but it's also a useful tool to have, the idea of the kunchi, and when you're talking to other people or maybe at some point teaching, it's going to be helpful to someone to know that as well. And then you can talk to people on their level and give them what you think they need to hear, as opposed to only having one idea. All right, first you have a bhakchak for that kind of ignorance of thinking, that girl's annoying. If we didn't have that ignorance, she's annoying, or some other kind of self-existent, like, where's her parents? Why aren't they doing anything? There's just not the room to have that ignorant reaction of getting angry, which then plants a seed for anger. So we're going to have to see it again and experience it again and again and again and again. If we're able to cut the cycle, we can see anger coming up, we can feel it, or see those thoughts starting to come and say, you're not the boss of me. I'm not following you right now. I know where you're coming from. You're coming from ignorance. Because there's 10 different ways to see that little girl. She's not necessarily annoying. She's not necessarily not annoying. She's not necessarily lovable or cute or, you know, like any of those things. They're just labels that we're placing, that we're being forced to experience by our past karmic seeds. But we're not forced to react in a certain way. Sometimes it feels that way. But we work with the times when we can do something different. And that's a very radical idea in our society. It's not how it seems that the world works.
You're not supposed to just act on... I mean, in that situation, are you supposed to... What is the right thing to do?
Well, it doesn't mean... I think it depends. What do you think would be the right thing? Like, based on our conversation... Yeah, there's no reason you can't still say something, but it makes a huge difference to say between saying it with anger, you're planting the seeds for anger again, like, would you quit kicking my seat? Like, that's very different. It feels very different, as opposed to, you know, you could start out with, like, hey, what are you listening to? Would you mind maybe keeping your feet down? You know, it's kind of bothering me when I'm sitting up here. Without any anger, any hatred, or maybe at that moment it feels like what I need to do is just sit here, let this anger come up, and not say anything about it. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I need to say something to the stewardess and ask them to say something. It doesn't mean that you don't do anything about situations, and of course, on up to like injustice that we see, it's not that we live all in our head, which would be a lot easier, actually, if that's what the idea was. But we still have to interact and live in the world because we live in the world. So if we're not able to control our anger, it's probably better not to say anything because we're planting a lot bigger karmic seed. And sometimes we'll try And we'll think we have it under control, and we'll say something really nasty, and then we'll realize after, and then, you know, we can do the four powers. We should go over those today. We haven't gone over those this class, right? This course? Yeah. Okay, so first we have the bakchak for this kind of ignorance. She's annoying. Like, she is annoying. There's not another option at that moment when we're holding it that strongly. She's annoying. And there's two kinds of ignorance that come out of that, and that is number two. So as a result, two kinds of ignorance spring up in your mind. The first one is the tendency to grasp to a person's self-existent nature, to, like, me in general. And it's not wrong to think that you're yourself. Ignorance just holds that self to be truly existent, as in that the girl kicking the seat is truly annoying, and I am truly an angel. Or, you know, like, whatever we... Or maybe we have a negative self-image. I am worthless, or a loser, or amazing, whatever it is. So when people say that Buddhists deny the self, it's not that we're not here. We're obviously here. We're not saying that. But it sounds, that idea sounds very mysterious and does attract people to Buddhism. So Dongzhen, say Dongzhen.
Dongzhen.
It means to grasp to some self-nature that doesn't exist. It focuses on yourself and interpreting yourself to not be dependently arising. So we would be dependently arising based on karmic seeds. So we think that we're like some solid person that exists in one way. We're not changing, which obviously we're changing. We were a baby at one point, in just that general way. The body's obviously changing. We're getting older. Even science says this. Everything's changing in the body in every single moment. But we're holding on to this idea of Heather. And then that's how I'm able to get irritated with the girl kicking the seat, because she's insulting me. That's the me. Like, this me that's there, and that I'm basically reifying and building this whole elaborate story around, and then acting that out through my life. And then B is the tendency to grasp to a self-nature of dharmas or things. And this is referring to basically bodily parts. My nose, ears, legs, etc. Say Shugi Dongzhen.
Shugi
Dongzhen.
Shugi Dongzhen.
So that's that one. Dongzhen was the first one. Tendency to grasp to me, and the tendency to grasp to mine. So in this case, dharma means my, in 2B. It generally means all existing phenomena are the teachings of the Buddha, but in this case it means something totally different. The first one is me, second one is mine. And when we see emptiness for the first time directly, it's the emptiness of ourself that we see. Which is kind of the most interesting emptiness, it seems like, anyways. That's what we're most interested in, you know? When we talk about the ignorance that causes suffering, it's one of these two. Then when we've seen emptiness directly, we'll understand for the first time that every perception that we've had has been wrong. These two cause the first link of the wheel of life, too. And This is an interesting thought. We've never not had ignorance, or we wouldn't be here. If your mind or your experience is anything like mine, which I don't know that it is or not, but if we have ignorant thoughts, if we're living in an ignorant way, a way that's just misunderstanding how the world's working, we've never not had that. That's why we're living in this sort of realm. We've always seen things the wrong way. And when we see the emptiness directly of me, that's when we'll first realize that. And it's said to be, I've heard before that when we see that, it's almost like it's so obvious that we can't believe we haven't seen it before. It's like, in a way, I've also heard it described as you're like subtly changing, and then it's like just one more change when you see emptiness directly. So maybe from my point to that point is a long way, but as I'm changing along the way, when I finally see how things are working, it's said that it'll be like, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't see this before. Almost as though it's so obvious. But it's not, because we can't see it right now. I know I can't.
I think when you do see it, does it say that it's impossible to break any vow? Or is it still possible?
I think it is said that is the case. Because you still have things ripening, you still have negative seeds that you need to clear out, but you're not seeing things the wrong way anymore. So you can never go back from that, and you just wouldn't do those things again. Like, just as much as we think the wrong things right now, or the correct thing to do after we see emptiness directly, we'll know exactly the correct thing to do because we've seen how the world works. Instead of having any sort of thought that, oh, this person's yelling at me, I'm going to yell back. I don't think that thought would even occur to us. It's just like after learning the truth about anything. You just know it, and you don't go back from it. I think that's correct. Yeah, that you wouldn't break any of your vows again.
And you could clear your karma. Like,
yes. That's what you're doing in the path. So there's the path of seeing, where you see emptiness directly, and then there's the path of habituation after that, where you're getting used to what you saw, and you're seeing it again and again, but you're also clearing everything out by doing, I think it's partly by not doing any of those things again, and by doing all of these goodness on top of it, and probably by purifying too, doing purification. And I remember first hearing this, that humans are in the best shape to reach enlightenment, and thinking that it seemed to me just awfully convenient that that would be the case. But that is what the scriptures say, that the humans are in the best shape to reach Buddhahood, because we have the perfect balance of suffering and goodness, suffering and happiness, where we're not bowled over by suffering, where we can't even think about anything else. Which we can probably relate when we've been really sick or gone through a really tough time. There's some times where we just couldn't even think about it. And that's what some, even human existence is like for some people. But then we also have enough happiness and enough goodness so that we have that balance where we can actually think, oh my gosh, I know there's suffering in my life. It's not so overwhelming that I can't even think of doing anything else. And I want to get out. I want to get out of this suffering. I'm tired of this cycle of going up and down in fortune all the time. Over and over and over. Good thing happens, bad thing happens. Get a job, lose a job, get a relationship, lose it, get money, lose money. It's just over and over and over and over. Friends come, friends go. Family comes, family goes. People in our life come and go. And our relationships go from good to bad, good to bad. It's just a constant roller coaster that we're on. And the only reason we can see that is because we're not overwhelmed by the suffering and we don't have everything too good to where we wouldn't even think about it, which is what any of the higher realm beings have. They just use up all of their karmic seeds, and in the last moments of their life they have incredible suffering, and they've used up all their goodness without practicing, and so they fall to the lower realms. And we can see that in a way in our lives too, with people who have everything go right for them all the time. There's just not, they don't have the incentive to practice, which is going to get them out of the suffering. So it's just using up this really amazing karma that brought this life. Okay. And then number three is you look at pleasant and unpleasant objects and perceive them in a totally incorrect way as self-existent. He's got quite the hair. So this is things like, what are we thinking about the person we don't like? Or how are we thinking about them? We're basically thinking that they exist that way on their own. And that's how we're seeing things as self-existent. We think that Donald Trump is self-existently really annoying. Or maybe that, I was going to say Hillary Trump, or maybe that Hillary Clinton is self-existently annoying. There's no other option. That's how she is, or that's how he is. That's where we get in trouble. The more we can soften our judgment of everything, the easier it'll be to practice in general. And it takes a lot, I think it takes a lot more courage to do that. It takes a lot more strength. It's easy to just be swept away by anger, desire, jealousy, hatred. Those are easy, and they're a lot of times encouraged in our culture too. So it takes a lot of strength to stand up against that current and also within ourselves. It's a lot harder to be kind. So we have the seed for ignorance. Then ignorance grows in our mind and we think of things wrong. The seed for ignorance thinks that if the guy yells at us and we yell back and he leaves, that it was the yelling that made him leave. And in reality, it has nothing to do with the yelling. It has nothing to do with the yelling back. If we do something and it gets rid of him, or we do something and it doesn't get rid of him, the perception of him is unpleasant because of my projection or my past seeds. That's the only reason. One of the best proofs for that is that, does everyone see them in exactly that way? Even if people agree with us, they still don't agree exactly, and we can feel that when we're talking to people, and that annoys us. If we're talking about someone who's really irritating, and they see, oh yeah, that is irritating, but they're still not seeing the irritatingness in the same way. And we get that sense that, like, yeah, you're not really seeing what I'm seeing, and I'm right. That's usually how we're thinking. So this ignorant seed ripens, and we look at pleasant and unpleasant objects, and we see them completely wrong. So if we want more of anything, give it away. If we want more anger, give away anger. If we want more hatred, give hatred. If we want love, give love. Happiness, give love. Or happiness, give happiness. So whatever we want more of, give it away. And we have to know the highest idea of emptiness and karma for these things to really help us. So we think everything's just happening on their own, on its own out there. And it does look like that, so it's hard to get our minds to see it in a different way because we've been seeing it this way for so long. But really, everything is our projection on a blank screen. And blank screen doesn't mean that that tonka right there is actually the same as this or something like that, or that it's really just white, and then we're all projecting all the color and everything. In a way, it can mean that, but what we're really talking about is I'm labeling this a certain way. All of us in here are labeling it a different way. Someone who doesn't like it is labeling it with that color on it. Someone who has no idea what it is labeling it that way. Someone who doesn't care either way has more of a neutral experience. Same thing with people, same thing with things. With everything we disagree on, we're mostly seeing it wrong. Because we just can't, on big issues, we can disagree with what people are saying. But in a certain way, we can't disagree that that's their perception and that's what's happening, and I have a different perception. So it doesn't mean that we don't stand up for things and say when things aren't right and fight for things that are right. But we don't, it's not like we go around condemning the person. We're fighting against ignorance. We're not fighting against Donald Trump keeps coming to mind, but you know, whoever else is like pushing our buttons in our lives or in the news, our family, our friends, even animals or things, like our computer is maybe really pissing us off. So it's based on ignorance that we could get mad at an inanimate object. And we're really just planting more seeds for anger. Doesn't change anything about what's happening. It makes it worse. Makes it a lot worse to get angry at it. Doesn't feel good in the moment. Doesn't plant a good seed. And then it brings more anger in the future. And the same thing with the happiness. In the moment, not always true. But sometimes doing the right thing feels good in the moment. But it's always planting a good seed for the future. And then I don't think we really got this when we talked about the environmental results. It's that everything around you is an environmental result coming from your karma. So for each one of us, everything we see around us are from karmic seeds that we planted. Everything that annoys us, everything that we love too, everything that's amazing, everything that pisses us off, we planted the seeds for, and then when we get pissed again, we're planting the same seed again and again. We're not changing what's happening. It's already there. We can't push it back down once it comes up. We're just compounding the effect and pushing it along again. Number four. Okay, so based upon the above misunderstanding of the inherent nature, well, these were all in a list, and they'll be all in a list again, but that's why it says above. So based upon the misunderstanding of the inherent pleasure or pain of the object, we have attachment or aversion for the object. Chocolate cake, come to me. I want that. Vitamins, I don't like vitamins at all. I think they're gross. So aversion for that. Even the gummy vitamins I won't always eat.
Those are the
options,
like chocolate cake and vitamins?
Yep. So, because we don't understand the nature of the object, or the nature of the guy at work or the guy driving the car next to us, or maybe the guy that's a friend of ours, or even our friend's spouse or our friend's partner. We push one away and we go after the other. So the next thing that happens in this chain of events that gets us in trouble is we think our friend's spouse or partner is pretty or handsome, and we think we want that. And because we misunderstand the guy at work, we yell at them. When really what we're doing, when we're going after the friend's partner, we're planting the seed to have all of our relationships fail, to not have support when we need it. When we're yelling, we're planting the seed to have annoying yelling people again and again and again. Everything from slight irritation to tremendous fury is bad karma, and we wouldn't have them if we didn't have any ignorance. So we have to cut it at the root, which is what we're getting at in this course. So the bok chak ripening is the process for the slight irritation on up to murder. And in a subtle way, we have these emotions all day long. So mostly, probably none of us are going to murder anybody in this lifetime. But we still have the slight irritation, or maybe not so slight, a lot. And it stuck in my mind. I forgot who said this. But they said that Dharma practitioners are the worst when things go wrong too, because things start going a lot better when you're practicing Dharma, and then little things happen and like you just freak out because you're used to things going well and you think, I'm doing all this practice, why is this thing happening? And also it's ironic because it's a lot smaller than it used to be, but you don't notice anymore, and so it's sort of like you throw like a little tantrum when these things happen. And it's not that big things don't happen too, they do. But in general, when we're practicing a long time, things smooth out a lot. Life becomes a lot happier, and that's a good sign of our practice. If we're getting happier, the practice is working. That's the point. If you're practicing and you're not getting happier, there's ups and downs, but if you're not seeing general happiness progression, either it's not the right path or you're doing something wrong. Let's see. Let's take a break. Yeah.